From the theme park capital of the world, bringing you the latest in theme park and pop culture news. Welcome to the Thrill Geek Podcast.
Welcome to the Thrill Geek Podcast, bonus edition, where we're going to be talking Season 8, Episode 3, The Long Night, and Episode 4, The Last of the Starks.
Yeah, we've got, we were going to originally do the Battle of Winterfell in one episode, but I told Barry, we have lives. Yeah, well, that and, you know, I was like, there was just a lot of death and darkness, and I just didn't feel like we had a lot to chew on for a podcast episode. So I said, let's wait till the next episode. And holy crap, did we get enough to talk about on episode four?
Yeah.
So I think we're going to start off with the Battle of Winterfell.
Yep. Episode three, The Long Night, which I really love how, like, so far this season, we don't find out the episode titles till after they air. Because I guess they don't want to give anything away in the episode titles. But it was a long night. It was the Battle of Winterfell. And began in a way, I don't know if everyone was expecting the Red Woman to show back up. She basically comes out of the darkness. And
oh, yeah, when she lights everybody's swords on fire. And
yeah, she uses the power of the Lord of the Light to light all the... weapons of the Dothraki before they charge into battle, and that pretty much the opening of that episode gave you an idea how this was going to go, because it's like this amazing shot, and they're, you know, all their sword, well, they're not really swords, I forgot what they're called, but all their
they had like scythes and scythes, different types of
all their scythes were on fire, and they charged into battle, and then you slowly saw the lights going, the flames going out.
Yeah, that whole first part of that episode, when she comes and the music, it got you so, your anxiety was like, oh my god, like what's going on?
I mean, the whole episode was like edge of your seat anxiety, and might as well go, let's talk about one of the first biggest complaints by a lot of people about this episode.
Yeah, I was going to...
Was the cinematography too dark in this episode?
Yeah, that was... I don't think at the end of this episode, I don't think the people behind the show were expecting the reaction that they got about everybody complaining about how dark and how what's the word I'm looking for?
It just wasn't it wasn't lit in a way people are used to. Yeah. However,
I loved it.
If you've noticed the last few seasons of Game of Thrones, they've gone to a very naturalistic light cinematography.
That's true, too.
You know, if you look at the first few seasons, everything is lit.
Everything's bright.
And lit. Yeah. And they've gone... I feel like it was like the last few seasons, I think I read an article, they've gone with more of a naturalistic lighting, like only using what would be considered available light.
Yeah.
It's like I can understand why some people had issues, especially if you were watching on HBO Go and you're dealing with compression.
Yeah, I think that was the only legitimate, not complaint, but issue I had. I would love, and I probably will, I want to go back and watch this episode
in like 4K,
4K Blu-ray, or just a direct download, because you could tell that the issues, if you were which me and Cheryl did, we streamed it on HBO Go, and there were some compression issues where you saw the little squares and the little pixels. That got a little bit annoying, but I it didn't make me completely tear apart the episode.
It's that, and face it, most people, and I'm not trying to sound elitist, most people don't bother to properly calibrate their televisions.
There were a lot of like directors and cinematography people on Twitter saying that too. They were mentioning like there were a lot, you know, people don't know how to properly calibrate their HD TVs, and
I hate it. It's like I mean factory settings on your TV are not the best settings. And God knows if you have it in that horrible soap opera looking mode.
Yeah.
That I don't know, which I to this day can't understand how people can watch a TV when it looks like that, because
what, the motion blur or whatever it is?
Yeah.
The refresh rate or whatever?
Yeah, because it literally gives me a headache, you know? I mean, I understood why they were going with the darkness. I mean, they were trying to give you an idea what it would feel like being in the middle of that battle. And it's in the middle of the night. The only thing that's lighting is fire. And then on top of that, the Night King brings basically, you know, wind and snow with him, and it really gave you that sort of claustrophobic, like, fog of war feeling. It almost reminded me of, like, the old strategy games where you literally had, like, the fog on the map where you couldn't see, like, what was
like like StarCraft back in the day.
Yeah,
like you're venturing around the map and you don't know what's around. Yeah
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I've watched the episode twice now, and I will admit, the second time I knocked the brightness up a little bit on the TV, and you know, I had no, but even the first time I had no problem following the action. It seemed perfectly fine to me, and like I said, it's a battle at night. Do you think it's gonna be perfect? You know, there's no perfect light.
Yeah.
You know, and
like you said, other than fire, and you know, that's really it. That's all they had to light was fire.
So, why don't we first go through? You know, we were expecting a bunch of people to die, maybe more than actually did. But then I think you really got to remember, oh, we still got this other big battle we got to
at the end.
Because I think we were all figuring the Night King wasn't going to win.
I actually have a list here of everybody that died, so we'll quickly go through it. Because even though not a lot of major characters died, there were still several characters that really sacrifice themselves. If you think about it, the majority of people that died in the battle were sacrifices,
you know,
for the battle. And the first one I have here is Edison, and he was he saved Samwell.
Only to get gutted right there in Sam's face, and which really began Sam's quest for survival, and his cowardice and terror was probably the thing that saved him. Even though he's definitely, you know, as we go through these who died, we also sort of have a who survived but you thought should have died question, and Sam probably should have died.
Yeah.
But like I said, I think they really tried to capture that his fear and terror was probably the thing that kept him alive. Is just he just kept running and just, you know, doing everything he could to survive.
It was really interesting watching him, because he's not the warrior that he used to be, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean,
he was more running for his life in fear.
Yeah, running for his life, and basically, I guess what, by the end, he's got like two dragon glass daggers.
Yeah,
and he's just like, you know, just trying to survive. And there's even a point where John runs past him, knowing that, you know, there's nothing he can do to help Sam. He's got another thing to do. And you thought that was probably going to be it for Sam, but somehow Sam survived. And
next on the list we have Little. I'm going to apologize in advance for some of these names, because names in Game of Thrones are one thing I'm not known for. Lyanna, the little girl.
Yeah, Lyanna Mormont.
Yeah, Mormont.
The lady Mormont. I had a feeling that she wasn't going to make it, you know, and the interesting is her character was only supposed to appear I think originally once, but they liked the little the actress so much.
She was so great. I loved her.
Yeah, no, she stole every scene she was in, and she got a glorious death scene. And I had a feeling she wasn't going to make it out that, and especially when she knew the previous episode where she's like, no, I'm going to fight with my men. It's like, no,
you're like, okay, you're dead.
She's a goner, but they gave her a hell of a death of being crushed to death by a giant. But in one of her last breaths, she gets to knife the giant through the eye and kill it.
Yeah. That was pretty awesome.
Which takes obviously a very major, one of the Night King's bigger soldiers off the field. So, yeah, she had a great death.
Next, we got Beric. He always reminded me of the guy from the... this is going to be completely random. From Ice Age, the guy with the eye patch.
Oh, from, was it Ice Age 3?
From Ice Age 3, yeah.
Yeah.
He always reminded me of him with the eye patch and everything.
Well, it made sense having him die because, you know, the Lord of Light kept bringing him back for a reason. And it turns out the reason was he needed to be in the right place at the right time to save Arya.
Yeah, it says right here in this article that I'm reading from, actually, Time Magazine, 6 times he got brought back by her.
By the Lord of the Light.
Yeah, she brought him back 6 times.
Well, yeah, I mean, his friend, the priest, you know, got killed last season when they were capturing the White. So there was no more coming back for him. You know, this was his last time, and all that led up to, you know, him saving Arya and. Literally taking God knows how I felt like he got stabbed probably like 10, 15, 20 times and still made it to the end and basically died in Arya's arms. Fun character. I mean, and one that's been there in and out for a while, throughout the series and not a surprising end and a fitting and a perfect end for him is sacrificing himself and making sure Arya survives after Arya, there was some worry she wasn't going to make it through the battle, but I mean, she had this whole badass fight period.
Yeah.
You know, but then the entire episode shifts into almost like a horror mode where she's trapped in the library trying to avoid the Whites.
Oh, yeah. I completely forgot about that scene. I only watched it once. I never got to go back and watch it a second time.
Yeah, I mean, she
that whole scene where she's in the library trying to avoid them, that was I loved that scene.
Yeah, it was a great scene, and then of course then the chase, then she gets out of the library, but then she's chased down, and that's where Sir Beric shows up and saves her, and he's gone, like I said, fitting end, and then of course, you know, we got one. Is it one more major character who died?
Well, it's down to the last few big ones here. Really, we've got. I mean, I hope I'm saying his name right, Jorah.
Well, yeah, Jorah was the biggest one out of all the characters who died in that episode. He was hands down the biggest death and the most dramatic, and he died doing what he had always promised to protect Daenerys.
Yeah.
As she was basically forced to battle because she got thrown from Drogon. I think I'm saying that one right. As he was attacked by Whites and had to take off basically without her to get them off of him. And Jorah was there to protect her, and even Dany had to pick up a sword and start fighting, and he got stabbed multiple times and basically died protecting her, and she loses. You know, this will be a begin. This is sort of another big loss for Dany, because Dany loses the man who, even though she can't love him the way he wants, who has loved her from almost the beginning and has been by her side on this journey, and is really the first person to believe in her. So this is like a huge loss for her.
And then really quick to move things along here, of course, we got Theon at the end, who...
Theon completes his redemption. You know, I mean, if there's one character on this show who's had the craziest journey out of all of them, it's probably Theon.
Oh, I agree 100%. His story's just been... I can't even begin to explain it. Where do you start with him?
I mean, you go from hating, from disliking him to hating him to thinking, oh, he's getting what he deserved, then feeling sorry for him, and then you start to root for him because he, you know, he finally takes a stand and saves Sansa, and then, you know, makes his way back to the Iron Islands, and him and his sister, you know, after, you know, she tried to rescue him all those years ago, you know, gives him another chance. And then, you know, it looks like he fails his sister again, but eventually battles back and rescues her. And then she realizes he needs to, you know, things aren't going to be right until he goes back to Winterfell and helps them out. And
that, the little interaction he has with Bran as the Night King's coming was really kind of pulled at my heartstrings, telling him you're a good man.
Yeah.
That whole scene was I was like, whew, here come the tears.
Yeah, and he goes out on his feet, you know. Yeah. He knows he's only got one option. He knows he's going to die at that moment, and the only thing he can do is run at the Night King, and even though he knows it's going to be the end, his death. But
speaking of the Night King, that's the last death we can talk about really quick is
so were you surprised it was Arya?
I was shocked at the whole thing. That, you know, this was another big topic on social media, that the Night King just dies by a knife. The Night King has this huge buildup over how many seasons, and he just gets shanked in the stomach by Arya, you know?
I don't have a problem with Arya doing it, and I like that it was Arya doing it, because
I'm not saying I have an issue with her saying this was just a topic that I was, you know, this was another heated debate.
Well, I mean, to him, she was not expected.
Yeah.
He obviously slightly feared Jon, because, you know, we sort of skipped over the whole dragon battle, because it really, that was probably one of the more failing moments in the show, is the whole dragon battle was very confusing. And
when Viserion, the undead dragon,
That whole sequence was very confusing and hard to follow. If I will say one part of this episode was very hard to follow, it was the dragon. It was the dragon battle. He ends up on the off knocked off of Viserion, and Dany tries to test the theory, can you burn him? And of course, you know, lights everything on fire around him, and then the fire clears and he's still standing. And then Jon, who had been knocked off the other dragon, starts running for him, and that's when he uses his powers to raise the dead on the battlefield. And of course, you get the moment with some of the major characters who have died with their eyes turning blue and rising from the dead. Jon goes at him, but he, you know, raises all these people up to stop Jon. So he's worried about Jon.
I think Arya was a good choice to get the kill, to kill the Night King.
Any of these jackasses on social media who tried to call her a Mary Sue, which, whatever.
Yeah.
her entire storyline has been building up about how much of an amazing killer she is.
Yeah.
She has been trained. Yeah, she has been trained to move stealthily. She has been trained to attack. She's been trained to fight.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole episode, the whole thing last season where in the little sparring, she basically showed she could kill Brienne. You know, I mean, it's like you said, and also the Night King was being arrogant.
Yeah.
You know, he finally had his moment where he was going to snuff out Bran and basically in his eyes snuff out the history of man. And wasn't expecting this little assassin to come out of nowhere, and when he thought he had her, you know, she used the trick that we had seen before where she dropped the knife to the other hand and stabbed him and shanked him right in his weak spot. And, like I said, there was the whole prophecy that the Red Woman had said about Arya, told her how many seasons ago.
That was there's so much. I'm literally going to have to go back and watch the entire show again after we wrap up here in a couple episodes, because people bring back so much information from previous episodes, especially with Arya when she killed the Night King.
Yeah.
There was so much foreshadowing leading up to that. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it's there was a lot of foreshadowing, and like I said, if to me, and it was a great moment. You know, yes, does this I you know, the Night King and the dead were always part of the story, but at least as far as like the TV show was concerned, because you know, we've been past where the books end for a certain while now. This is not the main story. I mean, the name of the show is Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you expected the Night King to be dispatched at some point. It's like they still paid. Yes, he was killed. And, of course, from the moment he's killed, all his magic goes with him. So all the dead drop and all the White Walkers explode, too. And it's like they still paid a heavy price. I mean, which we'll get to in a minute with the next episode, thousands of people died.
Yeah, and we could kind of wrap up, you know.
Yeah, I think the only other thing we didn't talk about is, like, everyone in the crypts, which we knew exactly what was going to happen. The whole foreshadowing last episode where they talked about how safe the crypts were, which yeah. I was always like, did they not think about him raising the dead? You know, but I guess they were hoping they wouldn't get to that point.
Yeah, the whole crypt scene at the end was it was towards the end.
Yeah.
That one scene with Sansa and
Tyrion
behind the crypt kind of hiding. That was a really interesting scene.
Yeah, I think they dealt with that you know, no one major died in the crypts. You know, like I said, that was part of the episode. Like I said, you know, there was a certain point in the episode where a lot of it turned more almost like horror, became more of a horror episode and less of a battle. And so it's like, you know, it served its purpose, and the Night King's gone, and the, for lack of a better term, the long night's over with.
Yeah. And then of course at the very end of the episode, the Red Witch, she kind of walks out in the snow and she just kind of dissipates because she's done. She's done.
Yeah,
her thing,
she said she was going to die in Westeros, and she did, and that was what's his face? You know, now, you know, he was going to kill her. He had planned to kill her anyway. After it was over with, but didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm
so
forgetting.
All right. The Last of the Starks. This was the one that we could, like I said, that had so much going on in it that we could spend the most time talking about. So let's dive into this episode.
You know, I mean, so much happened in this episode. Even though hardly any actual battles, but it was all, you know, it basically begins with of course, you have, you know, with like I said, thousands died, so they had to create these gigantic funeral pyres. Because, I mean, it's still winter. You can't really bury these people, so you're going to have to burn them. And, you know, you got a lot of touching moments with you know, Danny, you know, looking at Jorah, and then, you know, Sansa pinning the Stark, the wolf, on Theon.
Oh yeah, that got me.
Because like, you know, they got to spend some time together before the battle, but you know, they never got to have a moment. You know, so it's you know, that was sort of her, you know, basically, you know, telling him that he's a Stark.
Yeah, that one kind of pulled at my heartstrings a little bit.
Yeah.
But then after the burning of the bodies, we kind of go inside and we all kind of start to have another celebration, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, they won the battle, so it's like, of course you're going to have a feast. And, you know, so much happened in that feast. Just the way the looks, people, the glances, and, you know, Danny getting sort of upset with the way John was being treated. And
yeah, because he was kind of taking all the, you know, he was being treated as a king, you know, he was kind of getting the spotlight.
Even though they would have been screwed if Danny hadn't showed up with her armies and her dragons. She tries to, you know, make things a little bit interesting by acknowledging Gendry's, you know, that he's the bastard son of Robert Baratheon, but making him a Baratheon and giving him the title and giving him the Baratheon home to Gendry.
excuse me. Tormund's little tribute to Jon.
Yeah.
Again, this is another episode with Tormund that I love that guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, Tormund, you know, being Tormund, and you know, and like back, and the interesting thing, all the celebrations going on, and they're toasting to Arya. Arya is nowhere to be found, and of course Gendry, being Gendry, finds Arya, and Arya is, as usual, practicing killing. You know, it's like, and proposes to her, and of course, you know, we all know that that's not Arya, you know.
Yeah. And then I think it was right after the kind of the whole party scene where everybody's hanging out having a good time, the conversation between Danny and John, pretty much Danny begging John not to tell his sisters.
Not to tell his sisters. I mean, because she knows what this information's going to cause. I mean, we saw in the feast some of the looks Sansa and Danny gave each other. She knows Sansa doesn't like her, doesn't trust her.
There was even more drama between them in this episode when they were talking about the battle, when they were kind of sitting around the table there talking about the next battle.
Yeah.
There was
Sansa
some...
trying to get her to delay.
Mm-hmm.
And which is a smart thing. I mean, but Danny is so, okay, we finished this, now we need to do this. And which begins sort of these mistakes she makes.
Well, that pretty much sets up, you know, they set up this whole plan of attack.
Yeah.
And then Daenerys, and they're ambushed by Greyjoy.
Yeah, I mean, they you know, her, the Unsullied, and what's left of the Unsullied and the Dothraki head off and to get on their ships and head back to Dragonstone. And of course, as usual, out of freaking nowhere, Euron Greyjoy is just waiting.
He's like, I'm here. And forget about me.
And you know, it you know, they've gotten new scorpion crossbows. And they've, yeah, they've mounted them on the ships.
That was pretty crazy when I saw, because that wasn't the first time we had seen those. He, I forgot what season, what episode, but he had tried to use those giant crossbow things before.
Yeah, on the loot train battle, but they weren't powerful enough.
But he has since perfected them, and in doing so, takes down
Rhaegal.
Like I said earlier, I'm terrible.
You know, it's like I realize, you know, this is probably their way of sort of showing how much time has passed. That they've had time to build these new, more powerful crossbows.
Yeah,
but it's in some ways it seems a little cheap, because once again Euron comes out of freaking. How does he know? I mean, how does he know they're going to be there? I mean, has he just been? Have they just been sitting there waiting for them to show up? You know, it's another little cheap thing that they've done on this. I feel like the last two seasons sometimes, especially it's like the. It's their continual putting as many roadblocks in Danny's path as possible.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how someone who's she came to Westeros with so much, and she's and what has she got left? She's lost two dragons. She's lost most of her armies.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like if you're telegraphing that we're not going to put that Danny's not going to get to the throne, well you're telegraphing hard. So it's you know, and like, you know, they like I said, they take down Rhaegal and then they take out the ships. So once again, her fleet gets decimated. What's left of her fleet gets decimated. And then of course in the process Missandei gets kidnapped. They don't show that. You just find out about it.
Yeah. You know, another interesting part about this episode was a lot of the discussion between Tyrion and, gosh, what's the bald guy's name? Varys or whatever it is. Yeah. There was a lot of dialogue between them and where his allegiance is. That was really interesting, listening to them two kind of go back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how easily him and obviously Tyrion's thought about how quickly they've sort of turned on her, and bring up now because Tyrion knows Jon's ancestry because after you know we sort of go back a little bit, Jon being Jon had to tell Arya and Sansa.
And then Sansa's like, I'm telling everybody.
And then Sansa being Sansa and everything she's learned from Littlefinger, she's, of course, going to hedge her bets, and she tells Tyrion.
This has been a secret for how many decades and how many?
Yeah.
And then Sansa goes and just tells the world.
Yeah, and it's not a secret. Like Varys said, it's not eight. He's like, how many people know? It's like eight. It's like, it's not a secret anymore.
Yeah.
Eventually, everyone's going to find out.
Yeah.
And they sort of debate the back and forth. Varys's thing has always been he's about what's best for the people of Westeros, not the throne.
Yeah, he always claims his royalty is with the realm. His
loyalty to the realm.
Yeah.
Not to whoever's on the throne.
Yeah.
And, I mean, in a court. Like I said, I mean, I think one of the things I want to ask you, are you surprised how far Dany has fallen as far as like her quest and chance for the throne?
It's kind of like I see where they're going with this with her. You know, and we could sit here and discuss the whole Mad Queen thing. You know?
Yeah, I mean, they're obviously hinting at that. I don't know if that's actually really going to happen.
Yeah, but I don't think I find it surprising how hard she's gotten hit these last few episodes. It's been quick. Her downfall. But. It'll be interesting to see, you know, we got two episodes left, so I'm curious to see, you know,
Yeah, I mean, she sacrificed everything.
Yeah.
To fight for John. And all she's done, all it's gotten her is farther away from the throne. So I can see where her anger is, you know, I mean, she loses another one of her dragons who are like her children.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like her children, but also were her biggest strategic advantage.
Yeah, I mean, she played those dragons, you know, those were big cards in her deck.
You know, I mean, she's lost so much of her forces. So now she's basically relying on allies who, I mean, she doesn't have that many. So it's hard because I don't know if they're setting her up to fail or if they're putting enough things in her path for you to make her think that she's going to fail.
That's my thing with this show is, you know, I'll think one thing, but then I'm like, we're talking about Game of Thrones here. Anything can still happen, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there, so it's like, who knows? I mean, with her, you know, and as far as, you know, I don't think Cersei's going to, this series is not going to end with Cersei on the throne. Cause there's plenty of people who
want to kill her,
who want to kill her, you know, I mean, you know, the Arya and the Hound end up heading off together to head to King's Landing. The Hound probably, of course, to finally take out to try to kill his brother. And of course, Arya is going there to kill Cersei. We all know that's what she wants to do. So we're basically probably getting a team up of them, those two sneaking in to King's Landing together.
And can we talk about Jaime and Brienne?
Yeah, I mean,
those two?
I mean, you know, the whole thing at the feast with the Tyrion's drinking game, and of course it gets to Brienne being a virgin.
Yeah,
I definitely agree with some people when it came to some of the writing for the women in this episode. It was oftentimes very clunky. There, you know, between that and the whole Sansa, and if I hadn't have been raped and horrible things happened to me, I wouldn't be the strong woman type crap. And then of course, you know, like I said, the stuff with Danny but you know, it Jaime and Brienne finally get together. I thought it was cool that they just showed the prelude on the scene, and it was interesting how nervous Jaime was.
Yeah, it was really interesting watching both of their reactions as this scene's going down.
Yeah, and then it's you know, you get a little bit with them, and then Jaime, they find out the news of what's happened with Dany, with you know, her getting ambushed and her losing a dragon. And you know, then he decides to take off back to King's Landing.
And
they sort of make it his intentions vague.
Yeah, this was really interesting because there were people's snap reactions were at first like, oh, he's going to defend Cersei. No, I immediately went to the point of he's going to kill her.
No, because he realizes, you know, they sort of like, I can't remember if they sort of talked about it, like she's brought everybody into the gate, all the people into the gates, and it's, you know, she's basically going to use
thousands of people,
tens of thousands of people as a human shield.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, I think he told the things he said to Brienne to make her, you know...
Not, I forgot, what did he say?
He said a lot of, I don't remember off the top of my head, but
I can't remember either.
He said, you know, like, are you surprised by, it's like, I'm not a good man.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, he tried to sneak out in the middle of the night and spurned,
But Brienne's just heartbroken when he...
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people weren't happy with her being all tearful, but it's like, that doesn't surprise me, her reaction, because you know she always thought the best of Jaime, and
it humanized her a little bit, you know, it gave her some
like I said, I don't think he's going back to save Cersei. I think he's going back to kill her because he knows that's the only way to stop all of this.
Yeah, because he wants, you know, I honestly think whether he comes out of this alive or not, he's done with it. He wants to live a normal life now.
Yeah, well, he just wants it to, you know, and you got to remember, he was the one who killed the Mad King because the Mad King was going to blow up King's Landing.
Yeah.
And she's going to, like you said, she's perfectly fine letting tens of thousands of people die as long as it's, you know, her save. That's almost no different than what the Mad King did. And if he thinks he can stop this, then he may be the only one who can stop this. Then, you know, like I said, I think the things he said to Brienne were just, you know, because he doesn't want her to like mourn him or love, you know, just, you know, we've seen this type of thing in movies before where someone says some horrible thing before they go off to sacrifice themselves because they don't want that person to care about them.
Yeah.
You know, so it'll be interesting to see what Jamie's going down there to do. Like I said, I don't think he's going down there to protect her. I think he's going down there to try to stop her.
Oh, I do too. And there were a lot of people that immediately thought that
he knows she wants him dead. I mean, there was the whole scene which played out about as we expected with Bronn showing up and basically negotiating a better deal.
Yeah.
So it's like he knows she wants him dead. So I don't think he's going back there to try to defend her and that sort of, you know, the episode sort of ends with, like we mentioned, Missandei was kidnapped and Dany shows up with I'm assuming is not what's left of the Unsullied, but a contingent of the Unsullied with Tyrion and then the dragon. But the dragon is off in the distance. Because now the walls of King's Landing are covered, are on the towers, are scorpion crossbows. So they've had all this time to get ready for an invasion while they've been, you know, basically saving the world, while Dany and Jon and everybody have been saving the world up in the north.
And then, of course, Tyrion strolls up and tries to sweet talk Cersei out of her insanity.
Yeah, no, but Cersei knows what she's doing. I mean, Cersei is trying to goad her into coming at her with full force, and which would be a huge tactical error. it basically ends with you know, like I said, Tyrion trying, I guess they were trying to negotiate a delay. Well, giving Cersei time to vacate, leave the throne, leave King's Landing.
That's what it was.
Yeah, yeah. And negotiate a peace. But of course, Cersei, you know, being Cersei, she's not going to walk away. And you know, she basically tells Missandei, you know, any last words, and Missandei, it just says Dracarys, which, you know, she. Outside of her and Grey Worm, she has not exactly had a good time in Westeros.
Yeah.
So she basically told Dany to burn it to the ground, and then the mountain chops her head off right in front of Dany, and, you know, Grey Worm loses it.
It was hard watching him.
And Dany is, you can just see
the anger. You can see the fire in her eyes.
The fire and the anger in her eyes, and... You know, first she lost Jorah, and then now she's lost probably the closest thing she's had to a best friend, person she's had to a best friend.
Yeah, because she's been following, I mean, she's been with Daenerys since...
Since she got the Unsullied.
Yeah, since she first got him, so, you know.
She's been by Daenerys' side. Like I said, she's the closest thing Daenerys has to a best friend.
Yeah.
And now she's lost her, and so it definitely sets up, we got two, I cannot believe we have two episodes of this left.
I know.
And, you know, I mean, with two episodes left, two questions. Who do you think, especially probably after next week, who do you think's going to die? Who do you think doesn't make it to the end?
This is a tough one because with this show, you just never know.
Well, I mean, I think with everything that's played out, it wouldn't surprise me if the Hound takes out the Mountain, he's still going to die doing it. He's just going to die before, he's going to die after he kills his brother.
Yeah, you know, I don't think we have to obviously worry about any of the Starks dying.
I don't know, Arya. You know, Arya has been on this path, and it seemed like for a long time, even, you know, she has talked about her path ends in her death.
Yeah.
You know, she's willing to die to kill Cersei.
And like we discussed earlier too, you know, Jaime, I could see him dying.
Yeah, well, that's going to be the interesting thing is, I mean, I expect Cersei to die, but does any of the Lannisters make it to the end?
Yeah.
You know, that's a big question is, does any of the Lannisters make it to the end?
Grey Worm, I don't know. I mean, he's kind of, I could see him going.
Yeah, I mean, he has nothing to live for.
He has nothing to... Yeah, he has, you know, he's... You know, so I could see him going. I'm trying to kind of go through
people. But it's like, I have a... It's just, out of Danny, John, and Sansa, one of them's going to die.
Yeah.
I couldn't
for the life of me tell you which one. I mean, yeah, who do you think?
It's hard because that really ties into our second question is who ends up on the throne.
Yeah.
And Sin has brought up this theory of Sansa ending up on the throne because Sansa really holds all the cards.
And she's been really smart about this whole thing, too.
Everything she's learned from Littlefinger. And the interesting thing about the Battle of Winterfell is, unless I'm wrong, the Knights of the Vale were not there. So she still has that in her back pocket.
Yeah.
Is the Knights of the Vale. Because she's, you know, for all intents and purposes, seems to, you know... Her cousin, who I guess is technically, you know, the Lord of the Vale, she still apparently controls everything, though. So they're still basically the best and most rested fighting force in Westeros. She has under her control. So that's the interesting thing: do they come in and save the day at the end of the Battle of King's Landing? Which leaves Sansa holding really all the cards. Does Dany make it out of the next episode alive?
Yeah.
So like one of Sin's ideas is Sansa ends up on the throne.
You know, I mean.
Or I think I've also taught. I think one of the things I countered with to that is Sansa ends up. Hand of whoever ends up on the throne, because that would fall into more what she's learned from Littlefinger is the hand of the throne is the true power.
Yeah. I wouldn't even be surprised if we see John, you know, there's a lot of people because they're the centerpiece, John or Daenerys ending up on the throne.
Yeah, I mean, and then there's been the wild card idea of Gendry ending up on the throne because Dany gave him his title back. He's the lone Baratheon, and technically, really, he should be, if you count Robert as the last King, technically Gendry is first in line.
Yeah.
You know, true. I mean, the only reason, you know, that's not counted is because in Dany's eyes, the Baratheon was a usurper. You know, so it's like technically Gendry has the...
We never discussed him proposing to Arya and that whole thing going down, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, there was that, and well, we sort of did. We talked it briefly, but I mean, that wasn't really surprising, and it's not surprising for him to do that because, of course, he's in love with her. And,
yeah,
but he should have known that she wasn't going to go for that. She's not her dialogue took all the way back to season one, where she's not a lady.
Oh yeah, when she's talking to her dad.
Yeah, when she was talking to her dad, and so it's so now, it's like,
who do I want to be on the Iron Throne in the end? Tormund.
Yeah. Well, that's the other idea I have is if Jon doesn't die, but doesn't want to be on the throne. You know, I also have this other idea of Jon just heads north of the Wall. To go live with the free folk,
to go meander with the Neanderthals and the cavemen,
with Tormund and everyone else.
Tormund and his crew,
because he doesn't want it.
Yeah,
he doesn't want it, and he was brought back from the dead, and he's done. You know, I have this feeling. You know, he can't be with Daenerys. You know, there was the whole scene with the two of them where she basically begged him not to tell her sister, but they also, even though they made out, they realize it's just, you know, he can't get past that. He's not going to get past that. It's like, it's an easy thing for her because, you know, she's a Targaryen, you know, that's a common thing.
Yeah.
But
for him, it's something that's...
Yeah, it's a deal breaker, and once again, you know, the two women he has loved are two women he really can't be with.
Yeah,
you know, it was the God, I can't believe I'm forgetting her name. You know, it was the same thing with the other girl. She was a wildling, and he was a member of the Night's Watch. You know, it's you know, obviously this time he fell in love not knowing. And I like the idea, like, well, you know, when Varys and Tyrion are talking, it's like, well, I mean, they can marry each other. She's like, and Varys is like, she would just dominate him. You know, yeah. I think Dany may survive the battle, and I think Varys is going to try to poison her.
And interesting.
She dies, or I think Varys is going to die. One whether she dies or survives. But I would not be shocked if I mean they pretty much foreshadowed he's going to try to have her killed.
He likes the whole poisoning thing. That's his way to go.
Yeah. And so it's going to be an interesting two more episodes.
We got Dos Mas to go, two more to go. So anything can happen still.
Yeah.
Because each episode's still, what, 80 minutes?
Yeah, and I mean, it's, like I said, I don't think this is not going to sum up all nicely. You know, that's not the Game of Thrones way.
No, this isn't going to be Endgame.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not a Game of Thrones way. And I realize once they've gotten off the book, this show has really gone more of like a TV show because you sort of have to sort of wrap up things. I don't think we're going to see Sam again. I don't think we're going to see Gilly again. Like I said, I don't think we're going to see Tormund again. I have a feeling we're going to see Brienne again.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't think Sansa is going to just sit up in Winterfell. You know, she's still got a part to play in this, and like I said, I don't think she's just going to hang out in Winterfell and said bye.
Yeah, no, with Jamie going now, surely she's not going to be too far behind.
Yeah, and with knowing what happened to Daenerys, you know, she's not going to want to see Jon's, you know, slaughtered, because she knows he's going to battle till the bitter end. So like I said, I wonder if the Knights of the Vale are going to be the turning point. But we'll find out.
Yeah. We got two more episodes, one here in just a couple days.
It's crazy.
And then it'll be series finale.
Yeah, so I don't know if we'll do a podcast just for the next episode. We've got a crazy week next week with a little thing called MegaCon, and
we'll see. I'll kind of gauge it like I've been doing after each episode. If we have a lot to talk about, we can do one.
I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about. It's just a matter of scheduling.
Getting it in there, yeah.
Yeah,
scheduling. Hey, I want to thank everybody for listening to these more pop culture-ish episodes. We know the vast majority of our listeners are theme park fans, but we really appreciate everybody listening to these. We did the in-game review and we did the other Game of Thrones ones. They've been doing quite well. So I just wanted to say thank you to everybody for listening and enjoying them. So cool.
Yeah. It's very definitely thank you guys and ladies and everyone. And it's definitely, we aren't the most timely, but we hope you enjoy us discussing these things. We're going to try, hopefully in the future, we're going to try to get a little bit more timely with some of these reviews of TV and movies and
now that we're doing separate episodes with them, we're kind of learning how to spend an hour talking about movies and TV shows, and so we'll tweak it and we'll figure it out what works, what doesn't work. If you guys have any suggestions on what topics or how to converse, let us know on social media, Twitter, Facebook, all that.
Yeah, definitely. For the next two episodes, definitely. We'll probably put a tweet out, like any questions, everyone wants us to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
About these next two episodes, and like I said, we're trying to do a little bit more pop culture stuff. You know, maybe at some point on YouTube, we'll do like reaction reviews to some movies and stuff in the future. But we hope you enjoy this bonus episode.
But don't worry, we're still theme park at heart. So,
yes.
The pop culture stuff is just something that we've, I wanted Thrill Geek to kind of be a part of. And this seems to be one way of doing it. So, once again, thank you guys for listening to these specific pop culture episodes. We really appreciate everything.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy to think almost 3 years ago. Is it almost 3 years now that I asked you, hey, want to do a podcast?
Has it been 3 years?
I think almost 3 years since I first said to you, hey, you want to do a podcast?
and we are.
It's like, do you want to talk about theme parks and pop culture?
Yeah. No, I think us splitting them up was the right thing to do. So we have, the specific theme park podcast and these pop culture ones. So thank you guys. We really appreciate it. So.
All right.
Anywho, I think we're going to wrap it up here. Thanks, guys, for listening. And anything else, Barry? You good?
Nope, that's it. Thanks, guys.
We'll see you guys on the next episode.